right, here we go on a Friday. It is Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp with you. We are on location at Community America Credit Union in Olathe off 135th in Black Bob. We'll be out here till 2 o'clock. The real fun starts in 1 hour. That's the Red Friday tailgate that's taking place today. How about free lunch to the first 100 people starting at 11 o'clock today? And a chance to win some tickets to Monday Night Football. Chiefs Saints out at Arrowhead.
They have more than one pair, so they're going to get you out there on Monday night. Might watch the Royals game on your phone, but that's okay. Free food to the first 100, you said. There, they're going to have the Chiefs cheerleaders out here, KC Wolf. So some photo opportunities. Plus, they've got their big ATM gold. You go in there, you put in a giant card, you press in a pin, and out spits out free Chiefs gear. Free Chiefs gear.
And maybe tickets.
And maybe tickets. Uh-huh. That's how you get your chance to get those tickets for Monday night. So, yeah, big opportunity. So come on out to Community America at 135th and Black Bob and join us for the Chiefs tailgate, right?
It's going to be a lot of fun today, and it's beautiful outside. You know, there's some days where you're like, okay, you're outside doing a show. There's some days at camp, you know, it's 95 degrees. Or there's some days like today where it's going to be perfect. And right now, I'll be honest, it's perfect outside.
I don't know why you wouldn't want to sit outside and eat a free lunch and win some Chiefs gear and maybe some Chiefs tickets. That seems like a no-lose situation.
The tailgate starts at 11, goes till 1 o'clock. We're here till 2, so stop on by, say hello. It's a Red Friday. It's a Blue Friday. We don't need to get back into the details.
No, I'm not getting back into that.
But
it's looping
both
into that trap.
It is both. It's a Red Friday tailgate, but it's also a Blue Friday because we've got ALDS action coming tomorrow right here on 96.5 The Fan. Royals and Yankees. Michael Wacha on the bump. Of course, you guys can hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Coming up in about a half hour, we'll talk to one of the voices of the Royals, Ryan LaFever. It'll be good to get his perspective. He's in New York, of course. How's it with the Yankees right now? You hear Bob continues to talk about the pressure that the Yankees are facing, and I agree, but I want to get Ryan's perspective on that. Plus, in about an hour, we'll get into some Chiefs with Joshua Briscoe, our Chiefs contributor from ChiefsOnSI.com. There's some new reporting out today that Rashee Rice is going to get his knee scoped next week in Dallas, and that will provide some more clarity. Plus, there's a little bit of a conspiracy theory that's out there from one national reporter that I know.
You know what? Give me one guess. Give me one guess from the national reporter who has a conspiracy theory around the Chiefs.
Uh-huh.
Is it, without looking, Mike Florio?
You, my friend, would be correct.
I mean, how did I know? What a lucky guess.
We will get to that at some point today. But let's start with the Royals, of course, who do have an American League Divisional Series to get going tomorrow night in the Bronx. Right now, in the text line, you guys let me know as well. One, how are you feeling? But when you look at the Yankees and you look at what the Royals have been doing here as of late, what do you actually think is happening in this series? Because we know the first two are in New York. Game three will be the first home playoff game in Kansas City since 2015. If necessary, we get a game four on Thursday. And, of course, if this goes all the way to five, it goes back to New York in their ballpark there. But I think it's very simple for this weekend, is it not? Like, if you can find a way to split, that is a massive win heading into Wednesday. If you get swept, I don't think it's over, but boy, oh boy, you're in a position in a best of five where you would have to win out at that point in time.
Yeah, so and one of those games is going to be at the road. I mean,
so I feel like a sweep is what is required for this team to go and advance out of the divisional series.
A split. Avoiding the sweep,
yes,
if you will. No, I'm 100% with you. I don't think there's any reason to assume at this point that what they can't do is just lose both games, which is why, once again, just like we said in the wild card series, just like we said in that final series against the Braves. So for the third straight series, the game that I cared the most about won. Get this one. Get game one, and then the entire series is kind of in your control. You think the Yankees have pressure now. Imagine if they lose game one of the series. Well, then the pressure reaches an entirely different level and an entirely different point where this team's going to have to find something kind of special, if you're the Yankees, to try to make a comeback against the Royals. A team that seemingly, when they need to win in the playoffs, for the last day, when they get here, they do these kinds of things. So, yeah, I would think that a split.
Do you think do you think these games, though, are anywhere near what we saw in Baltimore? I know it's going to be stressful. I know we're going to be living and dying by every single pitch. It is that's what happens in this portion of the season, the postseason. But I'm speaking to the score itself, 1-0, 2-1. in a best-of-five series, I said it yesterday, and I know Vern kind of disagreed with me, but I just don't believe for this team to advance out of the ALDS that they can have a two-game stretch where they score,
just don't score.
Three runs. Like I don't believe if the Royals on Saturday and Monday combine for three runs, I don't know if that's good enough for a split.
I don't know how
and,
it is.
And I know we feel great about the pitching, although we're going to look at Michael Wacha's playoff numbers here.
I dug into the numbers. It wasn't as good as I thought.
A little bit later on, even though the entire rotation, Wacha and Lugo and Reagans in particular, have actually fared very well against guys like Aaron Judge, for example, Stanton and Juan Soto, and keep going through that, the Volpe, and keep going through the lineup. But I don't believe, no matter how great we now feel about pitching, that this can be another two-game stretch of just three runs if you want to get a sweep. A split. No. So that to me is the bare minimum for the Royals. Can they win Saturday night against Gerrit Cole 2-1? I would not bet my money that that's the result on Saturday.
It obviously comes down to, like most of these series, pitching. The Royals had the second-best team ERA out of the starting rotation in baseball. It was only the Mariners who were better than them. But the Yankees weren't bad, and I think that's the difference between some of these teams they've beaten recently. Not the Orioles. The Orioles actually had a good starting pitching staff a majority of the season, but they were injured and not at their full complement. They're going to roll out Gerrit Cole, and then Carlos Rodon's had a really nice year for Game 1 and Game 2. So the pitching matchup, yeah, maybe is even, because it's Wacha and Reagans, remember. It's not Reagans and Lugo. So for the first two games, and for the first time all postseason, I don't actually think you have the pitching advantage in the first two games. I think it's a net wash.
Well, I think Game 2 they have the advantage.
Game 2, fine, but I think Game 1 the Yankees do. So for the series, for the first two games of the series, I think the pitching matchup is a net zero. And so if you know that going into it, then find a way to get one. You guys are in the same position. We know the offense always favors the Yankees in this scenario. They've been way better at scoring runs, generally speaking. Okay. And now at this point, I'm starting to think the bullpen might favor the Royals because, Yankees don't have a bullpen they truly trust, and the Royals' bullpen is on one hell of a hot streak.
Gerrit Cole in the postseason, just for that point.
That was a stat for a while.
Overall, though, his numbers are good. 10-6, ERA of 2.93, and 17 appearances in the postseason. His last outing in the postseason was 2022.
Okay.
The Yankees were not on the postseason last year. So with the Yankees, he had three games, was 2-1 with a 2.95 ERA, 23 strikeouts, and 18 and a third. It was the year before where everybody made a huge deal about it because in 2021,
rocked.
He had one outing and a 13.5 ERA. But overall, his last time pitching in the postseason is
three
games and a 2.95 ERA. So I don't buy into the, oh, my gosh, Gerrit Cole sucks in the postseason stuff. His last postseason with three appearances, he had a ERA below three.
Yeah, he was really, really, really good. And typically speaking, right now, I don't think you have to be the greatest postseason performer for me to be like, well, I don't know if you can do it against this Royals offense.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a really good pitcher, odds are you're going to hold down the Royals offense. They're going to have to win game one, like 3-2. Like, they're going to need excellent starting pitching. That's the game where I might be on Vern's side where
you don't need four runs.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Like, honest to God, you're probably better off winning a game 3-2. Because if it's 5-6, I don't think that favors you. We talk about this style makes fight all the time in the NFL. I'm like, hey, if the Chargers are going to beat the Chiefs, they're going to want to keep this game in the 20s. Because you used to not want to get in a shootout with Kansas City. Now it's the opposite way. If the game's low scoring, I figure it favors Kansas City more.
Yeah, and as I said, we're going to get to Wacha's numbers later, and I think maybe this is skewing you a little bit because they are jarring to see postseason.
Yeah, they are. Quite a bit.
But the 2024 campaign, Michael Wacha, we said time and time again, did not get talked about enough because of how great Lugo and Reagans were. Michael Wacha, for the final 2.5 months, maybe three,
he's having a resurgence
of the season, was about as good as any pitcher in baseball, other than Skubal. Like,
yep.
I mean, other than that, in Sale, the two guys are going to win the Cy Young in their respective leagues. Other than that, I think Michael Wacha was a top three pitcher in baseball. So I don't know if I'll fully give the edge to Gerrit Cole. I think there's, like most things, there's always a balance. I think people trashing Cole for postseason appearances are incorrect. We just told you the numbers there.
Statistically, that does not bear any fruit.
But also, I don't think this is a huge swing towards Gerrit Cole at all. Michael Wacha has been one of the best pitchers in baseball since June.
Can I ask, as we're getting like ready for these games, and obviously we're out here at Community America for a Red Friday event, and you can get free lunch starting at 11 and a chance to win Chiefs and Saints tickets. But I'm going to be honest. hasn't come up very often because the Royals haven't been in the playoffs in 9 years. Is there any reason why I can't know what the hell time the game starts on Wednesday?
Yeah, everybody.
Is it just me? No. Can I not know what time this game is starting on at least Wednesday? I take Wednesday and Thursday, and I understand that I don't have like a regular. I don't work at Community America, right? I don't have a 9-to-5. So the odds are, no matter when the Royals game starts, it's mostly fine for me. But like, can I not know what time the game starts on Wednesday? What the hell are we waiting on?
I think there's a lot of Royals fans that either have bought tickets and want to know, or haven't bought tickets on the secondary market because they're not sure if they can make it yet until we get a game time. Yeah, I thought we would learn today, now that the entire divisional series is set, after seeing the Mets come back in epic fashion with Pete Alonso, who redeemed himself in the top of the ninth inning and sent the Brewers home in heartbreaking fashion. I thought, oh, now that we know all the series, give us some times. I don't know. Maybe we're going to have to wait till tomorrow or after game one of these AL and NLDS. I am a little surprised.
I got to wait till the end of Saturday now?
I think there's a lot of people are in the same boat as you that, as I said, have tickets or want to buy tickets, but they want to know, are they having to get out of work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or are they waiting and it's a 7:30 first pitch or something?
I'm going to guess because Dodgers-Padres play that we can all make
that'll
a,
be the late game.
I
late
assume
game.
We can all make a general assumption that the 7:30 Central Time game will be Dodgers-Padres. Maybe I'm crazy, but seems like a pretty good guess for Wednesday. But outside of that, I don't know. Like, because it'd be like, well, you know, it's the Yankees. They're going to want them at 5:30. The other game is the Mets and the Phillies. Those aren't exactly small TV markets. You still get New York on the other end. But in addition to that, you get Philly and East Coast time and, you know, like all those other things. So I don't know. I'm just I should be able to know what time the game on Wednesday is. I don't feel like we got to sit on this information. I think you could just tell me.
I think plenty of people are with you. The other thing with just the way that the postseason has been set up and just the broadcast schedules and everything, and obviously you should be listening to Ryan and Denny and Jake on 96.5 The Fan anyway. But I thought it was Michael Kay, who's the voice of the Yankees, one of the voices of the Yankees, I should say. John Sterling is still going to call some postseason games for them. Is that he was saying, you know, for the wild card round, they really should just let the local announcers do the wild card games.
I think it'd be cool.
Now, for this round, like, we get on TV Bob Costas or whatever and Ron Darling.
Yep.
But I actually agreed with Michael Kay. I was like, you know what? That for the wild card rounds, how neat would that have been to let, you know, Rex Hudler and Ryan or whoever on the TV side as well call the wild card games? I think that's a great idea.
Listen to Jeff Passan sent out a tweet last night of the radio call of the Pete Alonso home run.
Oh, well, that was perfect.
It is a great call. But part of that is because that man, making the call, has watched 162 games of the Mets. He knows every little ebb and flow they've gone through, everything Pete Alonso has gone through over the last 3 years. He knows the team intimately. So when you hear that call from the Mets side,
I'm going to ask Ryan about this.
You know, I think you get the emotion more than a national broadcast can supply you. When you hear Denny make the call, or Ryan Lefevre, or Jake Eisenberg, when you hear HUD, or like, you know, you're not going to get those same levels of emotion, but that also requires two broadcasts, right, in a way, because you got to offer that.
I get that.
So both teams, and just choose your broadcast.
So just listen to the radio anyway, yeah, and sync it up with the TV, and all is solved, you know?
Someone says, do people not have vacation or PTO? Just take half a day or the day off. It's that simple.
Depends on what
I think everyone's jobs are a little different.
Yeah, not every job can just request it 2 days before. Some you need to ask more, you know, in advance. It just depends on what you do for, I think, for a living on that.
Yeah,
it's
I think
easier for some jobs to just take the afternoon off than others.
Yeah, I think if you work in a corporate America 9-to-5, you can probably just duck out at 2 o'clock and put in the PTO. But if you're a nurse, or you work a service industry job, or you work, like, legitimately today,
anything, yeah.
I went to Quick Trip to get a drink on my way in, right? Want a little caffeine? Great. Got a drink on my way in from Quick Trip. The guy at the Quick Trip knows that I work in sports radio and was talking to me about the game, and he's like, ah, man, he's got to work right on Saturday. He's like, I hope someone tells me the score on Saturday. Had he known, maybe he could have gotten someone to cover shift. Maybe there's a non-baseball fan who also works at Quick Trip who doesn't care about covering the shift, but that guy can't watch it. You know?
Do you feel at home, Mr. Former Bank Teller? We're at Community America Credit Union.
Am I allowed near a bank based on some of the advice I've given on the station?
That's a whole different conversation. I feel like the big ATM they have here for eventually some of the Chiefs swag starting at 11 and a chance to win some Chiefs Monday Night Football tickets, I feel like they should have you operating that. This seems like the job for you, man. How many times have you
told me to go in there? I don't think they'll just let me. go. This isn't like guest bartending. I don't think they'll let me just be a guest teller and get in someone's drawer.
Well, no, not the teller.
And start handing out
not,
money.
No. Not inside the bank.
Oh,
I'm saying out here there's something called the big ATM, and that is where you get the Chiefs swag. That is where it could potentially kick out some Chiefs Saints tickets. You could be operating.
Okay.
That. Somebody, spoiler, somebody is inside that ATM operating.
Dude, you're breaking the fourth wall. Oh. Someone might have thought it was a cool big ATM.
It's a big ATM. You just thought it just
knows. You think it gets hot in that thing? No way.
Of course it gets hot in there. Of course.
I bet it just bakes.
Yeah.
I bet it just bakes in there. But that's okay. If they'll let me, I'll work it. I'll stand back there, and for 15 minutes, I'll work the big ATM. If people come by and have free lunch, by the way, starting at 11 o'clock, the big ATM, which you can win free Chiefs gear or Chiefs tickets to the game on Monday night, plus... I mean, you can see us.
Yeah, we're at the Olathe Branch, 135th in Black Bob. Hope to see you guys out here throughout the day. One other thing with this game starting tomorrow night, Aaron Judge, Bobby Witt Jr., the two guys that are going to finish 1-2 in MVP voting. Unfortunately, Aaron Judge is going to win the MVP. We've talked about this all year. Bobby Witt Jr., though, in his first two playoff appearances, we know, came up with the game-winning RBI. And... the stage is even bigger now for him, being in New York. It's the divisional series, all of that. But, man, this is an unbelievable opportunity for baseball. We mentioned branding and marketing your stars and how Bobby Witt already has more postseason wins than Mike Trout, who just didn't have postseason success or didn't make it to the postseason all that often. Judge, Witt, Jr., I mean, that is what this series should be all about from a MLB superstar marketing angle.
It's the only thing I would put on the screens. Like, almost to the point that people would be tired of it, if we're being honest. I would shove it in people's faces. I really would. Aaron Judge has played in so many postseason games. This isn't a Shohei Mike Trout situation. Aaron Judge has played in a ton of postseason games. But he's not been a big postseason performer. And I told you, the storyline is easy either way. Aaron Judge, the MVP on the New York Yankees, advances to another ALCS, or he just took down the king. Bobby Witt Jr. took down the guy who won the MVP over him, even though it should have been Bobby's, because that's the way I would sell the story. Look, I'm not saying Aaron Judge didn't deserve to win an MVP. He did. I just think Bobby Witt Jr. also deserved to win an MVP, and if you factor in all parts of the game, all things created equal, you would find out that they were equally great players. And I don't think that the vote is going to reflect that, sadly, because of home run totals. So, but you, as Major League Baseball, going to put those two guys standing back-to-back, holding the bat, saying it's Aaron Judge versus Bobby Witt Jr. Because while you can say, and sadly, Aaron Judge of the Yankees versus Bobby Witt Jr. Because in the other series, you make it about the big market teams. Mets, Phillies, that's a divisional matchup. Dodgers, Padres, with some Shohei tossed in there, right, obviously. That's the series. But this one should just be Aaron Judge versus Bobby Witt Jr. That's how I view it. I view this as a chance for Bobby Witt Jr. to stick it to Aaron Judge.
Even though
they don't even directly play against each other exactly, you know, but I look at it that way anyway. Like, as they're not, you know, it's like, it's not dual quarterbacks, but like, you know, nobody's, Aaron Judge
isn't
pitching to
Bobby. Well, what's weird is, you know, so far, now it's two games for Bobby. He's delivered in every single possibility to help his team advance. He's come up with the game-winning hits and everything. But also, on the flip side, Aaron Judge, he's been in the postseason numerous times. He has not been able to take his team to the championship, which is ultimately how he is being judged. But in this series, knowing that the voting takes place before the postseason, keep that in mind, too, for those that are like, hey, if the Royals win this series, but Bobby Witt has another three game-winning hits, you know, and Aaron Judge doesn't do much in the series, which I find hard to believe, but if that's the case, people say, well, then even more, how did Bobby not win MVP? But remember, the voting was done before the season, but it sets the stage for next year and for the rest of his career. If Bobby has another huge series,
people always think he's a postseason performer.
100%.
He could go 0 for his next 15.
And that is where your legacy is made. I mean, how many people across baseball, we've talked about how it's so regionalized now, but especially when you're in Kansas City and you're not in New York, you're not in L.A., you're not in Chicago, so many people just have never watched you play. Let's just be honest. They've not watched you play before.
Because you're in Kansas City. They had what? five nationally televised games
this
year?
Yeah, like the diehards can watch them on MLB.TV, but that's not the casual fan. The casual fan is not searching out Royals to watch Bobby Witt Jr. on a random Thursday night. I'm talking casual baseball fan. This could be the first time they ever watch him play because they're like, oh, Yankees? I'm watching because the Yankees are playing. Aaron Judge is playing. And then, oh, there's this guy named Bobby Witt Jr. This guy's fun to watch. This guy's incredible. He, other than Shohei Ohtani, might be the best player in baseball.
And the most exciting player in baseball because he does everything. His game-winning hit the other day was on an infield single. And, Gold, you and I both knew and everybody knew in the bar. When he hit that ball, the way that it was feeling, I'm like, you're not getting him. Like, I knew before the ball was even at first, like, you're not getting Bobby. I've watched him run down to first enough. That ain't happening. I've watched beat Bobby Witt Jr. in the K enough. You're not making that throw.
Yeah, the infield hit is part of his game. You know, some people are like, oh, they got very fortunate.
That's absolutely part of the game. We have seen that
because of the speed you just mentioned. That is something we'll probably see again in this series. Yeah, he has the ability to hit for power, obviously, and he was towards the tops in the league in triples. I don't know what the final numbers were, if he actually led the league or not, but he was towards the top of the league at one point.
I don't think he led in triples.
In triples. But the infield hit, that's not like some fluky thing for Bobby Witt Jr. He has done that countless times already.
That'd be like saying that when Aaron Judge gets a home run, it's fluky. I'm allowed to hit the ball in a way that makes me safe. And if I'm faster than every other player in the league, which he is statistically, well, then that's not like an anomaly. That is my game. That is part of what I do. Now, he finished with 11 triples.
Okay.
What a ridiculous season. 211 hits led the majors, 45 doubles. I remember one time we made a big deal about Alex Gordon just having 40 doubles and not the rest of the stats. 11 triples, 32 home runs, 109 RBI, and 31 stolen bases. 332, which led all majors. Part of the reason he led the league in hits is because he probably had 15 infield hits this year. I don't know, maybe more. Doesn't matter. He also, for the times he does get the lead runner out, he never rolls into a double play. He is always keeping an inning alive. Whether he still gets the out, but he's still safe, all the other steals a base, he creates runs for you in a way that a lot of players can't. But yeah, if I were Major League Baseball, I am very simply just saying Judge versus Bobby Witt Jr. Those are our two biggest stars, and you and I talk all the time. Baseball is terrible at advertising its stars. And it might be because it's a regional sport. So, like, everybody knows who Kirk Cousins is on a Thursday night football game, but everybody doesn't know who Bobby Witt Jr. is nationally. Fix that.
Look at the other series real quick. You get the Dodgers and Padres. That's a star-studded series based off the Dodgers alone, let alone adding Tatis to the picture, right, and Manny Machado with the Padres. We know you get the Mets and Phillies, and you have Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor going up against Bryce Harper and Alec Boehm and some of the other stars that are there in Philly, of course. And then in Cleveland, you get Cleveland-Detroit. Detroit, there's probably not many names anybody can mention nationally with that team, but they're one of the hottest teams
sure.
in baseball. And then with Cleveland, we know Jose Ramirez. So I would say outside of the Dodgers-Padres series, this should be the series star-wise that is marketed, but it's not. It's going to be like third on the list because people are going to look at New York and Philadelphia, obviously, nationally more.
Yeah, I would say that that's probably the case. That's why I'm still fascinated about what time this game's going to be played.
On Wednesday. Let's worry about Saturday first. I know we talk about it for scheduling yet, but in general, Wednesday's a long ways from now. We got two playoff games. We got a Chiefs Monday Night Football game before we can get to Wednesday, man. There's a lot happening before that.
A lot going to happen in life before that. You got anything else planned for the next 5 days?
No, I mean, there's some big college football tomorrow, too. You know, Missouri's got a huge one down in College Station.
They're underdog, aren't they?
They're 2.5-point dogs. If they clear
they have,
out,
they have one of two challenges, right?
Yeah,
Alabama now.
Alabama
like
and Oklahoma remaining after. Yeah. If they can clear the Aggies, then I think they're going to the college football playoff.
Because even if they lose the Oklahoma and Alabama game, they're probably going. Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, you're not wrong. At least in the, I think a two-loss team out of the SEC will go.
If you beat Alabama, then yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot left for the Royals coming up on this. I just like that every time they go, and this is why we'll talk to Ryan Lefevre in a few minutes and Joel Goldberg later. I just love that every time the Royals get in the postseason, they make it interesting for us. They just as easily could have been one of those teams.
They don't lay eggs.
They played two games in the wild card, and we were like, you know, it was a really nice season. So the Chiefs play Monday night, da-da-da-da-da, right, and we move on with our day? No. They're going to give us till at least Wednesday to watch playoff baseball. Thursday, Saturday, whatever. We might get, you know, and it could obviously continue to stretch beyond that. So get a win on Saturday so we don't feel like it's going to continue.
We are broadcasting live out at Community America Credit Union in Olathe. Their Olathe branch, 135th in Black Bob, for a Red Friday tailgate. It starts at 11 o'clock, goes till 1. We'll be out here till 2 o'clock. A reminder, free food, free lunch to the first 100 people. They'll fire up the grills here in a little while, starting at 11 o'clock. You can take some photos then as well with Chiefs cheerleaders Casey Wolf, and a chance to win tickets to Monday Night Football, Chiefs and Saints, right here at Community America Credit Union. Up next, though, we go out to New York and check in with Ryan LaFever, who you'll hear right here on 96.5 The Fan Saturday and throughout the entire playoff series. Get his perspective on the star-studded matchup between Witt and Judge, and does he believe this offense can get going on Saturday?
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Saturday. Back here on Cody and Goldie, live out at Community America Credit Union. They're Olathe branch, 135th in Black Bob, for a Red Friday tailgate. It all starts here in about a half hour. Free lunch, first 100 people that come on out. Plus, you can take some photos with the Chiefs cheerleaders, Casey Wolf. We're giving away some tickets to Monday night's Chiefs game against the Saints as well. As I said, it's a little Red Friday. It's a Blue Friday as well. And let's get right back into the Royals. We go out to the hotline and head up to New York and welcome in Royals broadcaster Ryan LaFever. Of course, you'll hear him tomorrow night right here on 96.5 The Fan for Game 1 of the ALDS. Ryan, it's great to have you on in October for the first time in a while, man. It's great to be talking some Blue October baseball.
Yeah, it sure is. And we got a big test ahead of us here at Yankee Stadium.
No doubt. I wanted to get your perspective, though, on this year's team. I mean, you've been with this organization for a while, and a 56-win team a year ago to now be the first team in baseball history to lose 100 and then win a playoff series. You look at how they did it. What's impressed you the most, you know, throughout this season to get to this point?
Well, I think in the big picture, I'm still impressed with the fact that they're even here. And on the field and in the clubhouse, the message has to be, hey, last year is behind us. This is a new team. It's a new roster. There's nothing we can do about last year. I mean, Matt Quatrero has been hammering that into these guys' heads since his first day as manager. You know, yesterday, learn from yesterday, but it's all about today. We can't worry about tomorrow. But the fact is they lost 106 games last year. And no matter how many new players you bring in, this young core has never experienced winning at the major league level. And so the starting pitching helped a lot, yes. Hitting with runners in scoring position helped a lot, yes. Defense helped. Being healthy for most of the year helped. But if you've never been there and you've never done that and you've never learned how to win games, I mean, statistics are important, but you're talking about human beings now who have to be put in a situation. You don't get to come up to the plate with your 9-10 OPS and roll it out there like a bowling ball against the pitcher's 5.2 ERA, and you just automatically, you know, win the battle there. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. I mean, you got two human beings who either know how to win a game or don't, or feel comfortable in the situation or don't. And that's really what it comes down to. And so all that individual stuff was important. But in the bigger picture, I'm just impressed with the fact that they figured out how to be a winning team and that the younger players in a very short period of time figured out how to be winning players.
What do you attribute that to in your mind, Ryan? Is it because Bobby Wood Jr. is just so great, or Bobby and Vinny and Salvi and the right leadership? Or, like, how does a team figure that out so quickly? Because you're right. Typically, you know, teams more quickly get used to losing than the other way around.
Well, Cody, when your ERA as a team is over 5, you go to the ballpark every day and you think we have to score 6 or 7 runs to win the game. And the way to score 6 or 7 runs is to hit a 3-run home run or a 3-run double or maybe more than one of those. But when you have pitching and you realize we might only have to score 3 or 4 runs to win this game, there's a mentality on offense where a guy begins to realize, if I drive in this one run here, that might make the difference later in the game. Or if you come up in a situation and the game is tied and there's a runner at third base with less than two outs, and you think about just getting that run home and not necessarily driving it. Well, let's say the bases are loaded with one out, and you're thinking about, how do I get this runner in from third first and not worry about the runner at third, the runner at second, and the runner at first? There's just this, you're simplifying the game. You're playing to the situation. The player who's most impressive, obviously, is Bobby Witt Jr. But the one I've think has really helped change the attitude of the team offensively has been Vinny Pasquantino. I mean, the fact that he drove in 97 runs, and the way that he drove in 97 runs with groundouts, sacrifice flies, singles, doubles, home runs. I keep using the word old school, and I hate saying that, but it's a throwback way of being a run producer. And we went through close to a decade of baseball where the only way to be a run producer was to go up there, find your pitch, and try and hit it into the fountains. And if you strike out, oh well, but every now and then you might hit one into the fountains and you drive in three and everyone goes bananas. Well, if you're a run producer, you're driving in runs all the time. And I really think his approach at the plate and blossoming as the Royals' number three hitter, I think that became contagious with the rest of the lineup.
When you look at the matchup itself, I don't know if just like Denny's blood was starting to boil, thinking of the 70s and the 80s of the Yankees, but at the end of that call, Ryan, I'm sure you caught it, he was pretty much like, you better watch yourself, New York, because you got the pressure on you and we don't, and here come the Royals. It seemed like Denny was ready to fight. What do you think about, like, the history of these teams goes way far back, but they haven't had a history here recently. Do you think that'll show back up?
I don't think so. I mean, you're right. That was a long, long time ago. I remember early in the season, and Vinny had a big game, and it was right after, it was before we came to New York to play the Mets, because I remember we were talking about it in New York. But the Royals had lost, I think, three in a row or whatever, and they bounced back. And they just continued to bounce back and kept bouncing back. And it wasn't until September 1st that they lost five in a row. And we kept using this, you know, their ability to bounce back, which is important. I mean, nothing spiraled out of control until those two seven-game losing streaks in September. They kept bouncing back. And Joel had Vinny on TV after the game as his guest. And Joel said something, how about this team's ability to bounce back? And Vinny almost tried to scold Joel and say, we're not bouncing back, Joel. This is just a good team. We're a good team. And we kind of laughed at it. And because I remember the next Sunday I had JJ on, and all he wanted to talk about is how this team has the ability to bounce back. So we could all see the bounce back thing. But it's that attitude. I mean, I think Vinny really did a good job. And it wasn't just him, obviously. I mean, Salvi's leadership, having been there and done that, and having big games and bad games, but his demeanor not changing and just, you know, pressing on, certainly that had a lot to do with it. Bobby's hustle. I mean, you got players in the dugout who know they can't do what he does physically, but he plays hard all the time. They can do that. You can do that. You may not be able to run like he does and hit like he does, but you can play hard. And Salvi plays hard, and he plays hurt, and he plays every day. He played 158 games this year in the regular season. But I just think I go back to that attitude, whether it was accurate or not, of we're not bouncing back. We're just a good team. And I think they believe that they were a good team. And this is a big stage, and this is a place where the Royals have not played well for a long, long time. But I do believe what he says. I think there's a lot more pressure on the Yankees than there are on the Royals.
We're talking to Ryan Lefevre, Royals broadcaster. You'll hear him on the call tomorrow right here on 96.5 The Fan. We see bullpen arms come and go all the time. But in one season, if we look at where they were on opening day, even from the names, and now where this bullpen is at, either acquiring guys through trade or some guys that weren't even up in the big leagues to begin the season, some other guys that were maybe thinking they were going to be in the rotation, some guys that were rehabbing. Have you seen a season which led to a team making the postseason where a bullpen has changed as much as they have and obviously changed for the better?
No, Alex, you're right. I mean, this right up through the first or second seven-game losing streak, it was like, do we have the bullpen to finish this season off? It did feel like it was slipping away there. And there was blame to be spread around to everyone. I mean, the team wasn't scoring runs. They were struggling hitting with runners in scoring position. But to win in the postseason, as we learned in 14 and 15, as I learned in 14 and 15, because I probably shared with you guys before, I'd never done a postseason game before the wild card game in 14. And when the season was over, 162 was enough for me. And I didn't really watch games closely. I wanted to know what the scores were, and I would watch the highlights. And if something big happened, I wanted to see it. But I never watched a game closely. And, I mean, just the other day in Baltimore, I mean, Zach Eflin, I thought, pitched pretty well. He was done after four innings. Seth Lugo was cruising along pretty good. He went four and a third innings. I mean, that bullpen might have to come on in the fifth, sixth, seventh, whatever. And the transformation and some of the guys that we're talking about, Chris Bubich pitching in the eighth inning in both games in Baltimore, and Daniel Lynch and his ability to give the team some length if you have to go multiple innings. John Schreiber's been there all year. And Lucas Ursig, I mean, I think we're still kind of scratching our heads now. How did we get Lucas Ursig from the A's? I mean, what did we give up?
And how many years of control does he have left?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, he's amazing. And I'll tell you a funny side story. My wife and two of my kids are here with me, and we're in Baltimore. And we went to breakfast, and we were walking in, and Lucas Ursig was walking out. He had glasses on. And he had two cups of coffee, one for him and one for his wife, and he was leaving. And I said, hey, Lucas, can I introduce you to my son, Lucas? Because I try and introduce him to, I introduced him to Lucas Duda when he was here and he was really little.
Sure.
And so Lucas says, hey, Lucas, nice to meet you. And then my other son, Evan, was there, and this is Evan. Hi, Lucas, nice to meet you. Hi, Evan. And he just couldn't have been nicer and just walked away. And I said, do you guys know who that was? And they had no idea who it was. I said, that was the guy that got the last three outs last night. So this was after the first game of the series. So I got my phone out and I played the video of him getting the last out and, yelling on the mound. He's just so fired up. And my kids' eyes were as big as the moon when they saw that. But it was just like, who is this guy? I mean, he was just so calm and so friendly. And you thought he was a guy that worked at a library, not a guy that's closing out playoff games. But man, what a move by the Royals.
I think what stands out some about the team, Ryan, is like, until you get to the postseason, you don't really know how someone's going to be in the postseason, right? It's kind of a mystery in there, but like, Cole Reagans in his very first postseason start, six innings, eight strikeouts. Bobby Wood Jr. in his first two postseason games gets the game-winning RBI. Once you get, a few games into it, I imagine players have to kind of shift that mentality of these games feel a little different going into it. But then once you start being successful, it's like, well, it really is just like baseball again.
I feel the same way, Cody, 100%. I keep thinking about that. I thought about that after game one. I thought about that after game two. And I don't have the ability to get in a player's head or anything like that. But I have been tempted when crossing paths with some of these guys and saying, how long did it take until this was just another game? Because, this is their first playoff game. They're close playoff games. I mean, every play matters. Every pitch matters. But you're right. I mean, all of these guys that are doing big things in this postseason have never been here before. And that's a big deal. And they're doing it in Baltimore in front of 40,000 or less than 40,000 and experiencing the standing ovations when there's two strikes on a hitter, or standing ovations after the third out of the inning, or a roar from the crowd on a routine ground ball to second base. I mean, everything is just so magnified. I was disappointed a bit, by the way, in Baltimore. There were a lot of empty seats. And I'm telling people in the organization who've never seen a postseason game at Kansas City, you're not going to see this at Kauffman Stadium. I mean, you'd think this was a big deal in Baltimore. Wait till you get back to Kansas City. But, yeah, I was struck by the exact same thing. All the major players in the first two games of the series just seemed so comfortable in a postseason game.
Lastly, Ryan, I was going to ask you about Kauffman Stadium on Wednesday. We were all there in 14 and 15. We all know what the wild card game against the A's was like in one of the most incredible sporting events any of us have been to. What do you think Wednesday is going to be like? And if there's anybody listening that maybe moved to Kansas City in the last 10 years and wasn't there, what are they in for?
Yeah, I don't know what to expect because I was just so overwhelmed by the wild card game in 2014. I was told for years by Fred White and Denny Matthews in 90 and 100 lost seasons when I hadn't done a postseason game yet. Just wait till they get to the playoffs. I mean, people are going to come and it'll be like nothing you ever experienced before. And Ned Yost would often say when we had a big game at home and we had a big crowd and the crowd was really into it, and I would ask him, or other people in the media would ask, you know, did that feel like a playoff game? And we didn't know if it was just Ned being Ned, but Ned would go, nah, that's not like a postseason game, not even close. And you're thinking, what do you mean not even close? I mean, there's standing ovation, sellout crowd, walk off, you name it, whatever. And he would just shake his head, have this smile on his face. I'm telling you, just wait. It's not like the postseason. And he was right. Once we had the wild card game, which of course is, you know, maybe the greatest game in Royals history, and all the playoff games after that, I mean, it really is different. And I mean this sincerely. I know I'm biased, but in 14 and 15, I don't know, other than Houston having the advantage of the roof being closed and the sound having nowhere to go, but as far as the fans actually being engaged and waving those white towels and the roar of the crowd, I don't think any of the other venues we went to in 14 and 15 compared to Kauffman Stadium. So I've been building up playoff baseball in Kansas City to the coaches and the players and the support staff that weren't there in 14 and 15 and just saying, you know what? I am most excited for you to be able to see a playoff game at Kauffman Stadium.
No question. We all cannot wait for Wednesday. Got to take care of business, of course, tomorrow in the Bronx and Monday night there as well. We'll be listening right here on 96.5 The Fan. Thanks, Ryan.
All right, fellas, good to talk to you.
Absolutely. That's Ryan LaFever, Royals broadcaster. You'll hear him along with Denny Matthews and Jake Eisenberg tomorrow as the Royals open up the ALDS in the Bronx. And, yeah, the image he was creating there, we all were there.
Incredible.
Image of what Wednesday could be like, and I'm sure the Royals will have blue or white rally towels that everybody gets when they walk in, as we see across all baseball stadiums now in the postseason. But just that moment, that intensity, whenever that game starts, whether it is going to be Wednesday at 7 o'clock at night or whether it's a late afternoon game, I don't care. The place is going to be incredible.
And we know that. We know that going into a postseason game that it is going to be nuts in Kansas City, because it has been. Baltimore, he is not wrong. That was kind of a sad state of affairs. You had pointed out like 24 hours before the game, you could get in the building for like $18.
Yeah, that morning, $16, lower level actual seats.
Dude, like I saw somebody I knew. Look, it's like a friend of a friend. But, I mean, they showed me the photo of their seats. They lived in Philadelphia. They were like, screw it, I'm a Royals fan. It's right there. I'll take the I'll take the train. I don't care. $30, and they were sitting like, it'd be like section 142 at the K, you know? Lower level, third base side. You know, like you're like, are you insane? $30? I haven't looked at the ticket prices today.
I'm looking it up again.
I haven't looked today.
With fees,
but
to get in,
what would it be to sit section like 142?
Well,
lower
just,
level,
just
third
to get
place
in
side.
With fees, the cheapest is $294.
Okay, now tell me what it would cost me to sit lower section, let's do 209. What's 209 running me? $450, okay? And you could be in that seat in Baltimore for 30. So if you need just like, if price alone teaches you about the availability, you can certainly do that. Maybe you can't go to the game on Wednesday, but you want to go to the Monday night football game. Well, we have that available for you. We're at Community America, 135th and Black Bob. Starting in just 10 minutes, they're going to offer free food to the first 100 people who can grab lunch. You'll have a chance to take photos with Chiefs cheerleaders and Casey Wolf. Plus, you can use their big ATM. That's where I see some people lined up now. And you'll be able to put in the card, press in a fake pin, I presume, get some free Chiefs gear and a chance for that ATM to spit out Chiefs tickets for you for the Monday night game as well. So that's all right here at 135th and Black Bob at Community America, part of the Red Friday tailgate here till 1.
Yeah, we're going to be out here till 2 as well, but you definitely want to make sure you come out between 11 and 1. It's going to be a great day. The weather is gorgeous here. Everybody's feeling good, not only because the Chiefs are undefeated and it's a Red Friday, but because we've got playoff baseball back in this city as well. I believe Casey Wolf will be out here within the next 5 minutes or so.
Yeah, I don't want to put a rain on anyone's parade for this game coming up tomorrow.
What are you about to say?
But I think we had been saying something, and then I hadn't actually looked it up. And then I looked it up, and I got significantly more nervous.
Uh-oh.
One thing we talked about with this team is Michael Wacha, proven playoff performer.
Yes.
This man's been in the big spots.
True.
He's seen these things before. Man, I got some bad news. He has done that. He has not pitched well in a postseason game, and this is not an exaggeration, 11 years. That is the last time he pitched well in a postseason game. He last pitched in 2021 in ALDS Game 2. He went 2 2/3 innings and let up 6 earned runs. It's like a 16 earned run average. He pitched in 2015, so he took a 6-year hiatus before that. 4 1/3 innings in a Game 2, 4 earned runs. The start before that, he came out of the pen. In 2014, he pitched 1/3 of an inning and let up 3 earned runs and just got 1 out. And then in 2013, he was dominant. 30 2/3 innings, 9 earned runs, a 2.64 ERA, on his way to championships, all of that. I'm just saying,
yeah,
Michael Wacha's pitched in the playoffs, but he hasn't pitched good in the playoffs in over a decade.
I have not, since you just put out the stats, I have not gone back to cross-check in terms of, I would love to know, what was his entire 21 season like? Because you mentioned 2013, those numbers, those are the basically the way I would say he's pitched this year.
That you're saying he's pitching like 2013 Michael Wacha.
Correct, right. And so that's what I would love to know. Those years where he wasn't as good in the postseason, how did he pitch in the regular season? Because the Michael Wacha we have all seen this year, as I said, I don't know, 25
he was actually
ago,
pretty bad in 2021. A 5.05 ERA and 124 2/3 innings pitched.
So completely different pitcher, Cody.
In 2015, though, now he only pitched the one game.
Yeah.
He was 17-7 with a 3.38 ERA. But again, that's over a decade or 9 years ago, too. So I don't view that quite the same way either.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's good to have that number in the back of your mind. I don't put a ton of stock in it only because, A, the length of time, but also
the way he's pitching.
I know how he's pitching this year. And the last time he had a season where he pitched like this, you know, it also had multiple outings in the postseason, it wasn't a problem. It's going to be a tough matchup. I mean, that's a very tough lineup tomorrow night that he's going to go up against. But Michael Wacha has been sensational this year. The Yankees haven't played a game in, what, a week? All of that, I think, in confidence that the entire staff has, seeing what Cole Reagan's looked like gives me more confidence in Wacha. He also has a defense that is currently playing great. That has kind of gotten lost in discussing how great
Bobby
the bullpen.
Wood Jr. and
Michael Massey was incredible in the field. So I think you couple the defense that's behind Michael Wacha. I'm not telling you he's going to go out there and pitch 7 shutout innings, but I'm not worried that he's going to have the performance he had in 2015 or anything like that.
I actually think the more important lesson for me is, don't overtrust Wacha. Like, if I were going into the game and I'm Q, be careful with how you look at Wacha during that time, right? Just don't, you know, if he's in the fifth and he's in a little bit of trouble, you can have a quick hook. You don't have to get carried away. The text line really matters.
They said buzzkill Cody over here.
I'm sorry that I pointed out statistics.
No, yeah.
Actual facts. Yeah. I didn't say they're losing the game. I just said you got to tread lightly, okay?
Uh-huh.
Like, I felt like that was something we were saying colloquially without the backing of, like, hey, wait, what has that looked like?
Right.
Because Michael Wacha, the whole pitching staff, in a moment of desperation, has saved this team. They've lost 2 in a row. Here comes Wacha to win. They've lost 2 in a row. Here comes Reagans. Here comes Singer. Here comes Lugo. The whole staff has done a good job of picking each other up when one of the other guys is down. But because you haven't had to use Daniel Lynch yet, and he is good for multiple innings, you haven't had to use Brady Singer yet, and he is good for multiple innings, there is no reason to leave yourself hanging out to dry with Wacha. That's all I'm saying. If he's great,
I don't think they will,
let him pitch.
I'm not worried
about
that.
The postseason hasn't been good for him since 2013. I'm saying if he's good, let him pitch. If he starts to struggle, you have plenty of arms to back it up and keep that game close.
Yeah, look, we can mention numbers also where you look at this entire pitching staff, and Aaron Judge has struggled against the combination of Wacha and Lugo and Reagans throughout his career. So we can definitely pull up numbers that fit either side. You know, I just think we've all watched with our eyes what Michael Wacha has been this year. He's been a different pitcher. He just has.
And he's been very, 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 very
good. I expect that to continue. And if not, because of the way Q has managed the bullpen the first two games of this postseason, I feel good about it. You know, they pulled Seth Lugo pretty early. You know, he's willing to do that. And there's some that thought that was even too early. So I don't think you should be all that concerned about Michael Wacha. Over on the text line, someone said...
text line hates me. Right?
Well, that, and also they said you guys are out there. The Chiefs cheerleaders are going to be here. Does Drew have to make a video? Well, Drew is manning the controls,
you
keeping us on
to.
The air. Drew's Twin Peak video will not be will
really?
Not
we're
be
not going to recreate it?
Oh,
yeah,
come
but
on.
We've got some people out here already. A good
you
got to
just do one and be like, we're out here, Community America. Fantastic.
Fantastic. Drew should do a video. Yeah, we'll make sure. Maybe we can
spec watch the board for a few minutes?
Just so you can drive out here. Up next, though, we'll get back to the Chiefs with our Chiefs contributor, Joshua Briscoe from ChiefsOnSI.com. We'll get his perspective on where this offense goes without Rashee Rice, and does he think the defense has what it takes on Monday Night Football? That's next as we continue broadcasting live from Community America Credit Union's Red Friday tailgate in Olathe.